Macmillan Audio presents The Demagogue's Playbook by Eric A. Posner. Narrated for you by Peter Burprout. Introduction. At dawn, the night was interrupted by the growl of 13 cannons, which brightened the dark sky and signaled the start of the momentous day. By late morning, enormous crowds filled the grounds of the capital. Though they came from all classes and walks of life, the people in this immense mass stood as one, as they waited with barely suppressed anticipation for the appearance of their new leader. They stood before the majestic facade of the capital, its design inspired by a Greek temple and the Roman Pantheon, which evoked the country's debt to the ancient inventors of democracy and constitutional law. Standing on First Street, those on the fringes of the crowd could barely make out the figures walking out the door of the rotunda, partly obscured by the columns of the east portico. Moments later, a roar erupted, as those at the front of the crowd recognized a figure, somberly dressed in black, surrounded by dignitaries, emerge from the building. The sound surged backward through the crowd, swelling in volume until the noise overwhelmed spectators. "The very heavens were rent with the shout which greeted the long-expected vision," wrote an observer. The cannons thundered again as President-elect Andrew Jackson took his seat. The crowds were expected to disperse after the inaugural speech and the taking of the oath, but they did not. As Jackson rose to depart, well-wishers pressed through the barricades and eagerly pushed toward him from all directions. For a moment, he was engulfed by the jubilant, heaving crowd. His guards, flanked on either side, ushered a path for him out of the mob, and he took flight on a white steed down Pennsylvania Avenue. Word got around that a reception was being held at the White House, and soon huge streams of people were pouring toward it from every direction, enveloping the government buildings along the way, and then the White House itself. Those lucky enough to make it into the executive mansion pushed and shoved one another, many scrambling up on furniture in their muddy boots for a glimpse of the president, who was being pressed against the wall by a mass of supporters. Servants, day laborers, prostitutes and pickpockets struggled with foreign ambassadors and society matrons for access to the cakes and refreshments. Punches were thrown, noses bloodied, tables overturned, china smashed into 1,000 pieces. As Jackson vanished within a circle of guards, White House servants lured the crowd out the doors and through the windows by removing the punch bowls from the interior to the White House lawn. One Margaret Smith, reflecting on what she had seen, observed that ladies and gentlemen only had been expected at this levee, not the people en masse. But it was the people's day, and the people's president, and the people would rule. God grant that one day or other, the people do not pull down all rule and rulers. The day after Donald Trump was elected president, I received a phone call from a reporter who asked me whether Trump would become a dictator. He then told me that, as far as he was concerned, this was a Warsaw Ghetto moment. I thought his reaction was extreme. While I didn't vote for Trump and didn't like him, I thought the reporter had lost all sense of proportion. The Warsaw Ghetto uprising against the Nazis in 1943 ended in the death of tens of thousands of Jews who were killed during the battle itself, or murdered in concentration camps to which they were transported. The idea that Trump's presidency would introduce authoritarian rule, or worse, received a great deal of attention. Several authors wrote books warning of such an outcome, and commentators had a field day. While one group insisted that Trump would be a dictator, another group argued that he was insane and therefore should be removed under the 25th Amendment. And yet, in some ways, this was nothing new. The slanderous claim, made by Trump, among others, that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, implied that he was not a legitimate president because of the constitutional requirement that the president be a natural-born citizen. Many Democrats argued that George W. Bush was not a legitimate president because the Supreme Court threw the 2000 election to him. The Republican Congress impeached President Bill Clinton.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?